listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Life has certainly changed in the last 80 years or so. In the 1930s, there were no television sets in family homes, no computers, no telephones. But if you did have a telephone, a little bit later, you were on party lines that were run by a real person called an operator. On the other hand, some things have remained the same. We human beings still search for our purpose in life. We work to make a living. We take care of ourselves and others, and we endure changes and tragedies. On today's show, we're talking with Shirley Sanders as she shares the threads of her life from sharecropper's daughter in the Deep South to earning her doctorate degree, raising 7 children and 7 grandchildren, and serving others. It's a story that will warm your heart and lead you to tears. I'm really glad you're with us for this show. You can talk to me on either of our chats at emotionalpro.com or blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living. And you can call and talk directly with our guest, Shirley Sanders, toll-free at 888-498-0570. That's 888-498-0570. And let me take this opportunity to thank you for being here and for helping us with our mission of informing the world about the power and importance of human emotions. Well, who is Shirley Sanders? She was born during the Depression era in Chiraw, Mississippi, to her African-American farmer father and her African-American and Choctaw Indian mother. She holds a bachelor's, master's, and PhD degree in nutrition, child development, and consumer education. She also holds a lifetime community college teaching credential in both cosmetology and barbering, and she has written health articles for a local magazine in Oakland, California. She resides in the state of Nevada right now. And Shirley Sanders, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you, Eileen. It's good to be on the show, and I'm enjoying it so far. And I do feel like a piece of living history that experiences some of the things that some of you never will know about. So that's where Sis's journey comes in. And I do hope you purchase it and learn a lot about how we lived way back in the day.
All right. So tell us a little bit about Chiraw, Mississippi, and you had 9 children in your family. Tell us a little bit about your childhood.
Well, my childhood at the time was happy because we didn't know any other thing. You know, how can you compare it to something? But we were happy because we had 2 loving parents. They were good people. They came from good families. My father came from a family of 20. His mother had 20 children. Mm. Can you imagine that? And my mother came from 9. It was 9. Then she had 9 of us. So she really worked hard. I think she had a little bad start. My father didn't. He could write well. He was a secretary of the PTA, and he write really fast and in a calligraphy form. So I really think he had a little bit edge on the education part of our lives. And my mom, she was like a farmer. She did a real good job on the land, like having a good garden. And she made us work, and we learned how to do all that stuff. She didn't have to make us. We just did it. Because one look from that lady, if you didn't do it, you know what was going to happen to you. So anyway, we had a really good start because we didn't have the fast food stuff. We lived off the land. I think that made us healthier. Mm-hmm. We didn't know about hamburgers and going to get all this stuff the kids eating today. We ate off the land, healthy stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that made us, because we all are long livers. My brother is being 91 pretty soon, and he's
wow.
doing fine.
Wow.
My sister, she's 90, and I'm 83 already.
Uh-huh.
So
uh-huh.
I think it's the start that my parents gave us that made us be healthy.
Yeah, I think that's really true, Shirley. And also, the patterns for going to sleep make a difference. I once had a program on by Mr. McKenna. He has a book called I Can Make You Sleep, and I asked him, I said, my early life, I was on the farm, and we went to sleep with the chickens and got up with the chickens, and I don't have any trouble sleeping, and a lot of young people do now, so I think those are early habits. Now, your father early on was a sharecropper, and I'm not sure people know what sharecropping is, so could you describe what he did as a sharecropper?
The sharecropper was really, it was just inhumane in a way they went about doing it. The black people that was just there, nowhere to go. So they would find somebody with land, and they would do what you call sharecropping on the land. They was allowed to use that land to grow and take care of that family, grow crops. At the end of the year, they would have to give the landowner one half, one third of the harvest. So that meant they had to borrow money to get food. They had to borrow money from the landowner to get. And when the end of the year got here, the landowner owned all of it, and that kept the sharecropper on this land for years and years. He never could pay this bill off because he had to get his seed from them, the food, the kids' clothes, the shoes, and stuff like that. So that was like back in slavery to me, because if you never pay it off, and you had to, you're in debt at the end of the year, even though you had to give him your half of the crop. What's that leaving you? And my father had to do that, and he felt so demeaned. I don't know how he got out of it, because he didn't tell us that, but he did. He told us how. So it's in the book how he got out.
Right.
And he did get out, yes.
Yeah, he bought his own land.
Yes, and, with the $48 that the government gave him.
That's right, right.
Yeah.
And I grew up in the Deep South in Georgia with my grandparents, and there were sharecroppers in the area. In fact, there was a family on the land directly adjacent to my grandfather's where the woman, her name was Lily, and she had three or four children. She owned her own land and did her own work. And another person was there who did the sharecropping. And you're right, it was really hard to get out. But that made a huge difference in your life, because your father and your mother, they not only modeled getting your own land and being your own person, but they talked to you about it a lot. Is that so?
That's so. They said, don't let anybody make you a slave. You got your senses, use them, and live right yourself, and you'll figure it out. Just don't be a slave to sharecropping. And that's my father's final words. He just did not want us to do that.
Well, it makes sense. But there's a lot, you know, what I learned a lot, and I know you did too, about the value of work and about being in nature. I learned to pick cotton to help put in tobacco, which I know you know about, where we put it in the barn to cure it and then take it out and sell it, and to pull cantaloupes and to help my grandmother can tomatoes and other vegetables. And I also learned to fish and clean those fish. Of course, on the farm, you don't do anything like catch a fish unless you're responsible all the way to clean it up. And those are good lessons.
Yeah, we had fishing times where the whole community would go fishing.
Uh-huh.
And we would get all these fish. It would be usually a Friday and a Saturday. And all the guys would go out fishing, and the ladies would prepare in these big pots outside. And they'd put the oil in the big pots, and they'd put wood around it. And they would dump that fish in there with cornmeal on it, and we all would have a fish feast good time.
Yeah.
And those were the good old days to me.
Did you guys have hush puppies, too?
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
My mother made those. I don't know exactly, because I don't make them now. I had to watch what I eat.
Uh-huh. So your mother, as you say in your book, Ceci's Journal, each of your parents had a message for you. And they were giving you principles to live by, like your father would say, get your own home. Be sure to to wherever you're living, own it. Don't let somebody else own it. And what was the message that your mother gave you? Because these principles guided you through your life.
Yes. My mother's influence included, you can do whatever you want to. Another one is, God is real. He sees everything you do. And you reap what you sow. Well, there's a will, there's a way. And that was the one thing really stuck in me. If I find you got to have the will to want to do something. And so if you don't have the will, you'll never do anything. And do not ever steal what's not yours. Those are the basic things she taught us, that you do not steal anything. And I remember stealing an apple in the store. We had apple trees. I don't know why I took that apple out, put it behind me, walked out, and the store owner saw it, and he told her, well, that gal took an apple out of here. It was bigger than the one we had. I don't know. But anyway, my mother beat me quite a bit for that apple, so I know not to ever steal anything was not mine. Mm-hmm. I think I was 5 years old, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, my learning, Shirley, I've been a family therapist for 42 years, and my learning is that character is developed when you live according to your own ideals and principles. And that is really clear in your book, Ceci's Journal, and listening to you right now, too, is that you developed a lot of character because your parents directed you toward these principles, and you followed those principles all your life, no matter what was going on, it seemed to me.
Yes, I did, mm-hmm. and I still do.
Mm-hmm. And so that also helped you keep your focus. It's like, if something went on that was difficult, like some of the difficulty in your first marriage, you didn't let that difficulty take you off your focus, which became to develop your own business and to get educated.
That's right. But about my marriage, I listened to her because she was telling me, oh, you have to stick to thick or thin. I don't care what. The kids need both parents. So I tried to stay. And I spent the first 15 years trying to fix my marriage. I thought it was going to be better. So the next 17 years, because I stayed in marriage 32 years, I spent the next 17 years trying to become independent and get my kids educated, do the best I could so when I left the marriage that we would all be okay. And it worked out that way. We were all okay.
Yes, it's really powerful to realize that you were running a successful business, going to college, raising 7 children, and making sure that every day there was a dinner on the table in time for your husband to come home because that was one of the demands that he made of you. That was a lot going on. We didn't even talk about housekeeping yet.
Well, I had everybody doing a certain amount. They had to help me with the food. Not the food. I did the food. I would always cook 2 meals in one. If I was making spaghetti, I would make enough for one day. Then that way, if I was going to be late, I'd call home and tell the kids, hey, put the spaghetti on, get it out of the freezer and throw it out or whatever. So I didn't just sit there and come running home and cooking every day. I would cook enough for 2 meals when I did one, and I was lucky enough to be able to buy a freezer, and that was a good thing because I paid $10 down and $10 a month, and I paid it all. So
wow.
I had a freezer to store food in, so when I did have to stay maybe a little later or didn't want to cook for that particular day or had a client that was going to be in the shop, which was on to the house, I could just go in and warm it up, and by 6 o'clock everything would be ready, and he didn't know when I cooked it. But I had meals for every day.
Very good, very good. So that took a lot of energy.
It did.
When I was reading your book, I kept thinking, oh, my gosh, this took a whole lot of energy. But you started early on, going to high school. Your mother wanted you to be educated, so you end up going about 30 miles from home, and that was a live-in situation at those times.
Yes, it was in a dormitory. I lived in a dormitory on campus.
Right.
I still think that's where I grew up there because I got a lot of stuff from that experience.
Uh-huh. But you also worked your way through high school
yes.
by cooking.
Cooking in the, that's right, I did.
And you started out, as I read it, and correct me if I'm mistaken, but you started out as a kitchen helper, and not too long later they put you in charge. Is that correct?
Right, I could, because I could cook those big pots. Because my mother had put me, I had got in a chair and was cooking those. You don't live on a farm and not work. I couldn't go out in the sun because of my eye. They would swell up. So you don't live on the farm. So she found another job cooking. So I'd put a chair up to the stove, cook those big meals. So I had experience before I even got to high school rather. I had experience on how to do all that. So it wasn't really a big thing for me. I just did cook in bigger pots. That was all.
That's really great. Yeah, I had a friend recommend that I ask my children to fix meals, plan them and fix them and clean up from them at least one night a week as they were growing up. And my son started when he was 5 and my daughter when she was 12. But I started them when they were like 1 year old, like you say, on a chair pulled up to the kitchen counter with a kitchen knife and a banana cutting.
Okay.
And when my grandchildren, my daughter-in-law didn't realize that little kids could cook, and so I had a few sessions with them, and she just sat and watched. Next thing you know, my 4-year-old granddaughter was able to use a carrot peeler and peel carrots as part of her contribution. That's really
wonderful.
Great. Yeah.
Yes, it was.
So I want to talk to you a little bit about focus. You said you spent 15 years in a marriage thinking maybe you could get it to be better, but then the next 17 years you focused, and this was a long-term plan, you focused on stabilizing people and educating yourself so that you could move on. How did you maintain such a focus? What did you do?
I felt like I didn't have any other option. That was my only out. It was to, I have to be able to take care of myself. During those 17 years, I did a lot of things that I thought I was not going to be able to do. I started traveling. I said, okay, I better see the world while I'm still in this marriage because I can get out there. Because when I get on my own, I won't be able to do those things. But that's not true. I found out I could. I was a little bit more able than I thought I was. But that was a good ending for me because I did get to see the world. I traveled, and I still love traveling. I've traveled everywhere. I just returned from D.C. 2 weeks ago, and I had a great time up there.
Oh, wow, wonderful. That's really great. Yeah, well, so one of the things I hear is that you were following your heart. You were doing the things that would come up in you. This is something I really want to do, and instead of questioning it or seeing all the reasons you could not do it, you just said, okay, that's what I want to do, that's what I'm going to do. Am I understanding you correctly?
You are, because I feel like if anybody could do it, I could do it. I'm human, they're human. Why not go out there and give it your best shot? And that's what I did. I read a lot, and I read things I want to know, things I want to do, and I try to figure it out while I read. So I would go to the library then. I don't go that much now because we have the computer and stuff now. But I would go to the library every chance and check out books and learn something about life because, like I said, my mother died when she was 52 years old, so she wasn't able to give me but just real good basics. But about things of the world, I had to find it for myself, and she encouraged me to find it for myself because she would tell me, okay, you have to cook breakfast in the morning. Now, if you sit up here all night and read, that's on you. So you have to get up and cook breakfast. And, okay, I never was made to go to bed. She said, if you're going to read all night, we expect breakfast on the table in the morning. And that's what I did. And so I learned a lot just digging through the books and listening to other people. I just learned because I wanted to. And
wonderful.
I enjoyed that.
Yes. All right. We're up to our first break. I'm talking today with author Shirley Sanders as we explore her life well lived, starting life as a sharecropper's daughter in Mississippi and rising to earn her PhD in nutrition and to write for publication. We're going to talk about how Shirley dealt with the many tragedies that occurred during her 83 years when we return here on Full Power Living, so stay tuned. Parent your child if he or she were a foreign exchange student. As a host for an exchange student, you'd have five main jobs to do. Those are the same five jobs important in raising kids. People around the world have used this approach to raise kids who are self-directed, make great decisions, and are immune to peer pressure. Get your copy of The Exchange Student Model for Parenting, written by me, Eileen Dillon, now available on Kindle. As a 41-year marriage and family therapist, a single, married, step, adoptive, and grandmother, I've got a thing or two to tell you that's going to lighten your load as a parent and help you create incredible kids who will become amazing adults. Go to Kindle.com and download The Exchange Student Model for Parenting today. All right. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. On our next show, David Eby, who is a longtime resident and choral director for Ananda Village, which is a spiritual community, joins me to talk about using music to expand and transcend. His music and choral direction was featured in the movie we showcased here on Full Power Living in January, Finding Happiness. So tune in Thursday, June 26th at 9 a.m. Pacific time as I talk with David Eby. And be sure to tell your friends and family about Full Power Living, please, because we have the opportunity in this one-hour format to really dive deeply into topics that are important to you and to our world. You can also subscribe free to our program on iTunes, and you can listen to the archives on emotionalpro.com. And today, I'm talking with Shirley Sanders. She's an amazing woman who's lived her life fully in two centuries. She's a loving 5-foot-1-inch tall mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother, born the fifth of nine children. And her rural roots and her modest upbringing provided her with a strength that many people today can only dream of having. And she is the author of Sessie's Journey, which is available on Amazon.com. Now, Shirley, before we get started with questions, we have a caller, Yvette. So let's see what Yvette would like to talk with us about. Yvette, are you there?
I am. I'm wondering, because I've read the book myself, I wonder what were some of the most enjoyable times of your life? Because I did read it, and as I said, it seems like there were a lot of challenges, but I did find some laughter in the book, too. What were the most enjoyable times of your life?
I think when my kids and I, we were really close and living with them and laughing. I played a lot with my children because I didn't have a marriage. I think the kids and I lived in one corner and the husband was in the other corner. So we did so many things together. We was kind of had to sneak sometime, but it was just so fun growing up with my children. I had a really good time because I think I still was a kid anyway, and I got to do through them things I wanted to do when I was younger. I encouraged them to, like, I wanted to be a pianist, and I couldn't do that. I was married. So I have two of my children are pianists, and they came out fine. So it was a lot of fun being with them. That was my best days, I think, growing up with my children.
Wow, that is nice. And if I can, what was the inspiration or the influence for writing the book?
Well, actually, I was coming from Korea, and the plane, I thought the plane was going to fall. And then I decided, then I started writing little stuff then. But life got in the way, and I stopped. But the real reason is when I was 80 years old, and my daughter gave me as a gift letters from many, at least 200 letters, and she made a book out of it. And presented it for my 80th birthday. And that was so impressive, and I decided to write a book myself.
So, in actual fact, you wrote this book since you were 80 years old.
I was 80 when I decided to write it, yes.
Yeah. So, do you have anything else you wanted to ask, Yvette?
No, that was it. I just was curious about what the inspiration was. And, you know, as I said, the book was inspiring for me. And I just wanted to know what joy was in the author's life.
What were you inspired by or to?
Well, I only have one child, and I just couldn't imagine having her pass away before me. And so when reading that one of the children passed away, the first one, it was just so devastating, but she was able to continue on. So I was inspired that someone lost a child and was able to continue on and still accomplish many great things after that. So that was very inspirational for me.
That is really true. Yes. Thank you so much for your comment.
Thank you, Yvette, for calling me. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure listening to you.
Yes, okay, thank you.
And that's really true, I think, a really outstanding characteristic, Shirley, all through your book, is that whatever happens, you pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and keep going. And that's why I was interested in how you got to be have such focus. Now, there were things, like Yvette said, you lost one of your children, and then your daughter became paraplegic as well.
Yes.
So what are the kinds of, can you just give us a little synopsis of the tragedies, because there were so many. You started out by losing some of your brothers, I think.
I lost my brother. Well, one of them got killed by the car. I hit him.
Right.
That was early on. I was 12, I think, at that time. And it affected my mom so much. And I don't know, subconsciously, maybe I decided I didn't want that to do that to me, but I didn't have no idea that it was going to be as stressful. It wasn't easy. I don't want any of you to think that it was easy. You know, it was just very, very hard. And each child that I lost, it took me a different one, because I just lost one a year ago.
Mm.
And I'm still grieving over that. I'm grieving over all of them, but he is just raw right now. I miss my son. He passed away last year, and I went into great depression, and I gained a lot of weight,
mm-hmm.
because I ate and slept. And then I looked in my mirror one day, and I said, you know, you got to do better. You're not helping yourself. You can't bring him back. You can take yourself and live and help some more. Live another day. So I've just lost 12 pounds, and I'm walking more now, and I'm eating correct, because I was not eating. I was eating too much. So now I'm kind of on my way to recovering from my last son that I just lost.
Wow. So that means you have one child still living?
I have two.
You have
two? I lost five. Yeah, I have a girl. I have two girls left. One is suffering with asthma really bad, and the other one is, she's my partner with the book. She helps me out as much as she can. And I have a cousin that comes over that really, really helps me a lot. Her name is Carrie. And I just have so much respect for them, because they know I'm computer crazy. But they both can help me, and Carrie's the one really do a lot of help for me. I don't know what I'd do without her.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I wrote the book, and she has helped me get the publishing correct and doing a lot of things that I don't know how to do. And I admit I don't know how. And she stands in for me.
That apparently is really great business, when you recognize what you're good at and what you're not good at. And then,
I'm not good at that at all.
Yeah,
I think I call myself a little bit stupid when it comes to that. I try hard. But, some things you just can't grasp, and I recognize that.
Well, it's a whole, you know, like computers, like learning a whole another culture or language. It's quite a bit. So there was abuse in your relationship, and I grew up in an abusive family, and it took me a number of years to see the patterns. Now, I think what's different from you and me is that you weren't abused as a child, so you would recognize.
No, wasn't I? Oh, I had I had two loving parents. They were great to all of us. We all acknowledged that we had good parents that gave us good roots, and that's the path to having a good life yourself.
Absolutely. But what do you think, was it just you deciding, wait a minute, I don't have to live this way, what can I do to move on to strengthen myself? Is that how you got out of the abusive relationship?
Well, I think we begin to ignore each other.
Uh-huh.
Well, I had to ignore him to live with him the way he was. And I think knowing that I didn't have to take that, I felt like, because I had aimed for it. Like 17 years I've worked on it.
Uh-huh.
So I say working on it, when the time comes, Well, I had set my time. I wanted my youngest child to be 18. The day she got 18 is the day I filed for divorce. I had already got it set up. So I was just working towards that. I would not advise my children to do that because it wasn't a good thing that I stayed in that because it was not a good model for them to live by.
Right.
They did not see a good marriage. They don't understand. They didn't know. But I didn't know that I shouldn't have stayed in it that long. I was listening to my mother saying, stay through thick and thin. I never knew which one was a good one.
Right.
If there was a good one.
Well, it's difficult in any case, you know, and you don't always realize the long-term effects on your kids. Now,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I know. I did the same, a similar thing, although not quite as long. Now, another thing you did, Shirley, was you utilized your talents. Obviously, you have a number of great talents. But
thank you.
From the, I think you were in ninth grade when your mother sent you to beauty school so that you could learn how to fix hair. And
yes, she did, because she said I was a little girl. I had no business running around on the streets for 3 hours, and so she knew I liked doing hair. I was doing hair anyway. And it was a beauty shop right next to the school. So she got on the bus and went and asked this lady, would she teach me 1 hour? And I would clean her shop for 1 hour in return for what she taught me. Then I had 1 hour to get to the bus station, which I had to walk across town, which was like 3 miles. And I did that, and I was just, I was in awe. I'm a beautician. I love this.
Uh-huh.
That's where I made my living at.
Yeah, and you got to the point, did you have 5 shops going simultaneously?
Or no. My first little shop was in my house. I had one built. I helped to build a shop. I put it on the back of my house, and I could watch the kids when they come home, and they made sure they did their homework.
I want to talk with you a little bit about family, because you had a good number of brothers and sisters, and you stayed close. And say when you and Al moved to California, you stayed with one sister and then you moved to another sister, and you and your family helped each other as you went along.
Okay, now back up now, because I didn't move. I moved, what happened when we left Mississippi, she moved to Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
and I moved to Oakland, actually Alameda, which is that area. Yeah, but I was going to move to visit her to get away from the marriage, but I found out I was pregnant. So I didn't move. I only moved with one sister till I was able to get my own place.
I got that wrong. I apologize.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's okay.
And then your daughter, Janine, was in a wheelchair. She was injured in an automobile accident and became a paraplegic. And even though bound to a wheelchair, gave birth to 7 children.
Oh, that was one thing I just couldn't understand. I thought she couldn't even get pregnant, but I was wrong. Real wrong.
But the person who ended up raising those children was largely you, was it not?
Largely? It was always me.
Okay.
Yes, I did.
So, in total, then, you've raised 14 kids?
No, I had 13 grandchildren. My first 4, they did fine. My sons got married, and they had 2 each, and those children did very well. They didn't need my help, and they're doing quite well right now. So Janine had 7, and my baby girl had 2. So it was 9 children that I had to raise.
Wow. So you raised 7 of your own and 9 more, 16 children.
Yes.
And this
wait a minute, back up to 7. My first child was died at birth, remember?
Oh,
but
he
was my child. So I raised 6 and 9.
So,
nieces and nephews, so some of them had to come and live with me for a while.
Now, we just did a program, Shirley, on grandparents as parents. And I explored with Sylvie DiToledo, the woman who runs that organization in Los Angeles, just how difficult that is. You just about get your own life on an even keel, and suddenly you're back going to school meetings and making sure homework gets done.
Yes, I did. I learned a lot from that, but it was. I'm not going to say it wasn't hard. It really was.
Uh-huh. And were you able to organize your grandchildren as efficiently as you organized your children?
Well, I'd like to tell you what's happening with my grandchildren. I think I did okay. My first grandchild, she lives in Texas. She's got her own home. She finished college. That's the first one. She got two kids. And the second, which is her brother, he's doing well in Texas, and he got two children, got his own home. And then my third one, these are not the kids I raised. These just, they are my grandchildren, okay? Mm-hmm. This young lady, I'm so proud of her. She's in her 30s, and she got a master's degree, and she's a vice principal of a high school. Can you believe that?
Wow.
And her brother is, he's just got married. I went to their wedding, and he's a juvenile probation officer, okay?
Wow.
And my next one was Anthony. Well, I wasn't going to call everybody's name, but he bought a home near me, but he moved, and he had his own home also, and he got a pretty good job in a big retail store.
Wow.
And I have his sister, this is second up through all the children now. His sister is, she finished college, got her master's. She works for Homeland Security in New York. And one young man, they're getting a little younger now. He's working he's been on his same job for 3 years. And I have another one that's in Texas, in Houston. She's going to college. And the younger boy, my youngest grandchild that just left last year, he's in Job Corps. And one that's not in college, I'm trying to push her to get her in college right now because I don't like her not being in school. She went 2 years. I want her to go further. I'll get a trade or something like that. So those are the kids, my grandchildren.
Wow, would your mother be proud, huh?
I think she would.
Yeah.
She loved me so much, and she loved all of us. I think each one of us thought we were special because I think she told us all the same thing. That's what a smart mother would do.
All right. Thank you for telling us how they're all doing. We're up to our second break now. I'm talking with author Shirley Sanders. She has written a book called Ceci's Journey that recounts the fun and the tragedies and the triumphs of her 8 decades on this earth. Shirley now lives in Henderson, Nevada, and by my reading, she's enjoying rest and self-care that she richly deserves. And we'll find out what Shirley thinks she might have done differently in her life when we return here on Full Power Living. We'll be right back. How difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want? To take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes? Or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com. All right, welcome back to Full Power Living. We're talking with the author of Ceci's Journey, Shirley Sanders, about how life has changed and how it has stayed the same in the past 8 decades of her life. Here's what Amazon.com says about Shirley's book. It's a gritty account about the life of an African Native American woman born in Mississippi during the Great Depression. Ceci's Journey keeps you flipping the pages to find out what happens next in her tumultuous life of struggles as a black girl during the late 30s in the Deep South. Ceci goes through racial tensions, survival of spousal abuse, loss, and constant betrayal. And as she shared with us earlier in the program, she also had fun, and that was good to know. Shirley, where can people get a copy of your book? Your website, I know, is s-sanders, S-A-N-D-E-R-S.com. Where can they get your book?
You can get it at Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble's, and pretty soon you'll be able to get it on e-books.
Okay. And you also said that you're available on Facebook and Twitter. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So people can get hold of you, can't they?
Yes, ma'am. I hope so, because I'm looking forward to that.
So I want to ask you about religion. You mentioned your mother talking with you about God, and I was impressed that you were working at one point, raising your children and working 6 days a week, and still insisted that you get up and go to church on Sundays as well. So I want to know, what did religion give to you through all of this?
I think it gave me stability and something to hold on to. I think everybody needs something to hold on to. My mom was gone, and she had left this thread that, okay, you have God. I'm not here. I'm not going to be here. And you know you need something to hold on to. And I do have faith and belief in God, because I feel like without him, I would not have been able to make this journey without the love of God and my faith and believing that I would get things done, put my mind to it, treat everybody right, and it'll come back the way you put it out there. I do believe in the law of cause and effect. You act ugly, it's going to come back that way. So that's what kept me strong, is my faith in God.
It always does seem to help for us to have something larger than ourselves. We can get pretty narrow-minded and negative if we don't have something larger than ourselves. So thank you for sharing that. I like that. Let me just remind you, those of you who are listening, we've got a lot of people listening today, that our toll-free number is 888-498-0570. 888-498-0570. Give us a call if you'd like to ask a question of Shirley, as Yvette did. Now, Shirley, I want to talk to you about service to others. You're 83 years old, which is a long life, and as you've mentioned before, you're in good health physically, mentally, and spiritually. And when I talked with Dr. and Master Shaw on a recent program, I told him that at 71, I'm quite healthy, and asked him if that's a matter of genetics or what. And his first question to me was, have you been serving others? And I said, well, yes, I've been a therapist for 42 years. And he said, that's it. When you serve others, you stay young. What about you and serving others, Shirley?
You know, that is so true. That's the way I live, I think, because I have been like a beacon to a lot of people. As a matter of fact, I'd like to tell you a little short story now.
Oh, please do.
I have a young lady that she didn't know me. Somebody told her that I lived in Nevada, and she's doing an internship, getting her law degree here. And they said, well, just call Shirley. She'll let you stay with her. She's been here 2 weeks, and I didn't even know her. But she's been a joy to be around. She goes to church with me. She helps with the clean. She's just wonderful. So she has some friends, some family that's coming to a family reunion that's convening here.
Wow.
And she asked me, could they come and just one night? So I have two young men downstairs sleeping. I don't even know them, but they just feel like my grandma. I say, okay, call me now. You got a place to stay, you know, long as you act right. So that's kind of where I've been. I've had lots of people in my house that you think, but I get rewards from that. They send me things. I don't ask. They just do that. I got so many things in my house that somebody have left here or sent to me. So it equalizes out. I'm not losing anything by helping those young men not have to pay hotel fees.
Right.
And
well,
they still sleep. They didn't get in until late, and I'll get up, and I'll get to meet them when they get up.
Oh, nice. And you're staying young to boot. You know, we have another caller. We have Eunice on the line, and let's find out what she would like to know.
Right.
Eunice, are you there?
I'm here.
Great. What would you like to ask Shirley?
Well, actually, I'm a relative of Shirley's, and my siblings used to come and visit during the summer. And knowing that in the book that she describes her tumultuous lifestyle with the abuse with her husband, I wanted to find out, because I never knew. She always seemed to be so happy and so well put together, and she was just so loving. And to this day, she is the most amazing person that I know.
Yes.
So, Ann Shirley, I wanted to ask you, how were you able to mask that abuse from other people?
Well, I felt like I was ashamed. One thing, I didn't want anybody to know that I was stupid enough to take that kind of stuff. And I felt like if I was going to have to stay there, why discuss it with other folks? If I'm going to stay there, stay until the end. And then it was something I didn't feel like I needed to put out. My kids know, they knew, most of, you know, the bigger kids knew, older kids rather. And I felt like it was something that I would just have to mask. And it was, because I wasn't looking for sympathy, it wasn't nothing anybody could do. So why not just go ahead and just ride with the tides until the time come to leave? And that's what I did. And it was hard. I'm not saying it's easy. But then he put up a front as though he was a loving husband. He wasn't, but he put this front up so nobody really knew. A lot of it, neighbors knew because they could hear me screaming. And then the kids knew, like I said, older kids knew. So that's the way I think it stayed quiet. Did that answer your question?
It did answer my question, and I just wanted to reiterate something that I remember when I was visiting one time, and I think I asked you something about an automatic dishwasher, which I didn't really know anything about at the time, but you said, yeah, I got an automatic dishwasher. When we get up and finish dinner, the kids automatically get up and they wash the dishes.
I do remember that.
So I just wanted to say congratulations. I'm so proud of you, and continue the success in your life. I appreciate knowing you and loving you.
And Eunice is in the book also. She's a lovely, lovely niece that I've been around a long time. She got sick, and I went and made sure I had to see. I feel like I'm a grandmother.
Oh, wow.
I do feel like, because I raised her mother, and I feel like,
yeah,
I'm a grandmother.
You know, and Shirley is, just like you said, you know, the giving part of her heart is just amazing. My ex-husband, he was addicted to cocaine, and she offered, or I asked her, because she had so much knowledge from dealing with this type of thing with her own children, I asked her if he could come and stay with her while he was trying to get himself clean. She didn't know him. She knew me, and she trusted me. And so she allowed him to come into her home and guide him into a way that he could try to get clean. It didn't work out because he wasn't able to get into a program, but it just goes to show the huge, huge heart that she has. And it's just amazing, amazing. I don't know of anybody who would give of themselves the way that she has, and she's phenomenal.
And look at Eunice, look at what an incredible effect. It's like a river coming into the ocean and opening out, you know, with all of this force, this energy into the world. It's affected you and countless other people. For you, Shirley, to have that kind of heart and open it to other people, it's really a blessing.
Thank you. I do feel like I'm blessed, because I'm blessed. It's not that I'm always giving. I receive so much. I have so much junk in my garage that people have given me. You might think I'm a hoarder. We have to get rid of it. I have garage sale, but it's stuff that I was given. I didn't buy this stuff. So we get ready to have a garage sale to get rid of some of it that I can't use.
Well, you know, you did. Thank you for your call, Eunice. I really appreciate it. One of the things that stood out is toward the end, Shirley, of your book, Ceci's Journey, you talk about needing to take care of yourself. And I just want to know, are you doing that? And what are some of the ways you're taking care of yourself these days?
Well, I am eating better, because I didn't like to gain weight. Like, I looked ugly. I didn't like it. My stomach's all. So now I get up in the morning and I make sure I eat fruit first before I eat anything. And I had some this morning. I had my blueberries.
Uh-huh.
And I had a cup of coffee. I love coffee. I've been drinking coffee since I was 8 years old.
Wow.
And then I go outside and stretch. Sometimes I run because I have a large backyard. I run back there because I may do that in my pajamas so
uh-huh.
I can run the dog. I have a little dog named Louie, and we do things, and he looks out after me too. He won't let me sleep too late. So anyway, I eat, and I make sure that I just do a meditation in the morning. I go in the room, I meditate a little bit, not a long time. You don't need a lot. Just do some. And I try to just be involved with my community. I go to church on Sunday, and I meet friends, and they're just my family. This is another extended family, and I just love what I'm doing. I do what I want to. If I want to clean up, I do it. If I don't want to, I don't. So I have the freedom I've never had, and I'm enjoying my life.
Wow.
I love people, and people love me. And I love the way my life is ending. It is not ending yet. I'm going to be 100. And I
hope
I have this feeling, even when I get to where I can't get around, I can't drive. I'm just not looking forward to that, but it's going to come.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thankful that I'm still driving.
Wow.
Still doing things for myself. I have a garden. I didn't have one this year because of my son. I didn't work in the garden this year. But I have some tomatoes and bell pepper that's bearing a little bit out there. And I like doing that. And I like, like I said, I like just learning new things.
Right.
And I think you never learn enough. You just never do. And I like trying to. So I'm a pretty happy person.
That's really great. Thank you. And I know, too, having grown up on my grandparents' farm, I can barely go a year without growing something, at least a tomato.
Yes, I have grown things.
We have a lot of young people, younger people than you and me, anyway, listening to the show. What, your mother gave you advice, your father gave you advice. What advice would you give them for living a good, successful, solid life?
I would think the beginning, get a good education. If you don't want to go to college, get a trade. Be independent. And don't do things that you're going to be regretting later on. And stay away from the drug world. That's even smoking and some drugs, is they say now this new one I call a hookah, whatever that is, it's wrong too. I mean, if it's going to alter your mind, then you don't need that. Use your own mind. And if you're going to be engaged in sex, make sure you protect yourself and give homage to your ancestors. Talk to them. Learn from them. Don't just put them in a corner and think they call they old. They don't know. We don't know the new stuff. But you can learn from them also. I like talking to older people. I don't have that many older than me now, but I still have always had older friends, and I feel like you can get wisdom from them, and maybe sometimes you can ask, because I asked my granddaughter to help me. I call her in a minute to help me with this computer, and that way we can learn, and I'm very, very grateful that I got to be on this show today. Thanks to all of you that's listening, and don't forget to pick up Ceci's Journey.
That sounds wonderful. Ceci's Journey, yes. So, Shirley, thank you so much for sharing your life and your struggles and your strengths by writing Ceci's Journey. It's obviously, as we've been hearing, you are inspirational and your book is very inspirational. Let me remind you who are listening that Shirley's book is available through Amazon.com, and you can also find out more about her on her website, which is s-sanders.com. It has been an honor having you on the show, Shirley. Thank you so much for taking it. This is a risk for you. You haven't done this before. And has it been fun for you?
I enjoyed every moment of it.
Great.
I really hope to do it again.
Okay, well, we're glad we got you off on a good foot with radio.
Thank you
so much for being with me on Full Power Living today.
And I'm starting a new book. You will get that sometime next year in 2015. I'm starting a book on longevity, so wish me luck.
You know, a woman I know who's a psychic told me I'll write my last book when I'm 94, so you can
well,
you can head
for
that, too.
Go for that. Go for it.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Shirley. So join me again next week when we discover David Eby, how to expand and transcend through music. David appeared in January to talk about the film Finding Happiness, which depicts Ananda Village, the dream that Paramahansa Yogananda had, and it was created through the efforts of Swami Kriyananda, who was also a guest here on this program. So David starred and directed the angelic music of this film. You will really enjoy talking with him. Or listening to him. Thank you, Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media, for your dedicated service as our producer. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become. And thank you for being with us.
You're listening Power Living with Eileen Dillon.